Welcome to our 200th episode of Edgewise. We'd like to thank all of our listeners. We actually hit 1 million listens not too long ago, and we promise to keep up the great guest list. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Today on Edgewise, our guest is Wayne Rogers. Most of you are familiar with his acting. He's a former TV star. Wayne Rogers is also a highly regarded cable news business pundit. He's a serial entrepreneur. He's been very successful in starting up several businesses. He's responsible for the relaunch of the Kleinfeld's Bridal Salon product line. He's written a new book, Make Your Own Rules, A Renegade Guide to Unconventional Success. Wayne, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you.
All right. Obvious question. How have you made your own rules throughout your career?
When you say there are rules, there's a conventional approach to everything.
Sure.
My getting into this came through my start in show business. I came at it not with any conventions in my mind, any particular set of rules. I didn't go to business school. I didn't come out of Harvard Business School or Stanford or wherever they might be. It was on-the-job training, so I had to make up the rules as I went along.
Did you get professional career advice from anybody?
My father passed away when I was a kid. He was a Rhodes Scholar, so he was a very bright guy. I did not get a chance as a young man to explore his mind. So I didn't have a lot of guidance in that sense.
Right.
If I'd been really smart and I thought I was going to end up being a businessman of some kind, I would have gone to Harvard Business School or something like that. I didn't know my life was going to take these turns. So it is what it is.
Now, in the book, you make a passionate case for the role of creativity in business. You said business can be like an art.
It not only can be, I think it is, in many cases, a creative process, particularly if you're entrepreneurial. I've been in a regimented organization. I did 3 years in the United States Navy. When you're in that sort of a thing, creativity is decried. You're not necessarily asked to be doing a lot of thinking on your own.
Exactly.
If I had to go to work for, I don't know, pick a large American corporation where there is a certain amount of regimen. You have to be somewhat political and all of those things. I'm not good at that.
Right.
So you come to these things without any training. At least I did. It came to me extemporaneously.
All right. How did show business provide a foundation for your success in business?
I think it's the methodology.
Can you explain?
Yeah. I had danced with Martha Graham. Most of our dances were based on Greek mythology. So she would read the material. And then she would lock herself away and she'd make sketches, ideas of how it would look and what symbols she would use and those kind of things. And then she took that and threw it all away. Then she went down on the floor and worked with the dancers. She had immersed herself in the music itself and in the ideas she had. And then she let that work on itself. And I think that happens with most people. Henri Poincaré, the famous French mathematician, was working on a set of Fouchian functions, and he couldn't solve the problem. He was on vacation in the south of France. Just as he stepped on a bus to go to the beach, bingo, it hit him. So that's cooking there all that time. Neil Simon, whose plays I produce, wrote some of those plays in 2 or 3 days. Brighton Beach Memoirs, he wrote in 3 or 4 days. Well, he didn't write it in 3 or 4 days. He'd been working on it all his life. It was back there in his subconscious somewhere. It percolated up to the surface, and bingo. I think that's the way a lot of problems are solved. If you leave yourself alone and you trust the homework, got to do the homework, it'll come to you.
Right. Now, Wayne, you're obviously involved in reading a wide range of material.
Yes, I love it. I'm cursed, I guess I would say, with an inquisitive mind. If you're cursed with that, your reading tends to be somewhat eclectic. I don't read a lot of fiction. I used to, but I don't anymore.
And when you're thinking about going into a business or doing an assessment of some sort, do you find that sometimes you are drawing information from the past? Or is it that you don't pay as much attention to what happened before?
The latter. I go forward. I've done the homework.
Right.
The homework that you do going forward is reading all of the financials and immersing yourself in the facts of that particular business. What are the projections of this business? How are we going to do it? You're going to make a judgment call. Should I invest in this business? I talk about in the book, for example, there's a chapter in there in Kleinfeld, a wedding store here in New York.
So why don't you tell us about that?
Now, I don't know anything about the wedding dress business,
right,
but I knew that Kleinfeld was a great brand and had been driven down. It was a moribund business in that sense, but I knew it could be revived now. What do I have to do to get from A to B? And that's factual evidence that I'm going to look at when I see the financials. And I have to trust my judgment that what I've done in the homework is right. Namely, this is a great brand. How do I know it's a great brand? Because I get girls coming into the store who say, my mother bought a dress here, or my grandmother bought a dress here, and I want to buy my dress here. All of those things tell you. And a lot of that is the homework you do that you've learned, not from any books or from any school, but those are things you pick up by experience.
All right. What about your assessment of people? What do you look for in somebody who would be a prospective partner?
One of the first things is honesty, whether somebody is devious or not. A lot of that is feel, too, and your experience in meeting people. Second is their competence, not necessarily their experience. That means they can absorb this information about this business in a relatively short time, and they understand how to identify those things that you need to press the business going forward. Is this a sales-oriented business, or is this a technology-oriented business, and where do I need to put the emphasis, and how do I get to that as quickly as possible?
And when you have invested in businesses, and there is a CEO or a top manager, have you ever had to make a decision about who would head up a business?
Yes.
So what would you advise regarding this?
Essentially what I just said. That's why personal interviews are a lot more important than resumes. Anybody can write a resume. It's like a financial statement. Anybody can make up a financial statement.
Mm-hmm.
In the banking business, the old rule was the know your customer rule and the know your banker rule. Character was more important than what was written on a financial statement. In the old days in a small town, the banker knew everybody in the town. Everybody knew the banker. So it was a question of, is this guy good for it? Is his word good? Is he an honorable person? Those are the things you find out in a personal interview that you can never put on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely true.
By the way, for example, I had two friends who went up to Bernie Madoff once he was promoting to manage their money. They walked out, and as they were going down the elevator, one of my friends said to the other one, what is it? He said, it doesn't pass the smell test.
Hmm.
Now, Bernie Madoff produced numbers. They were cooked books, but he produced them. And something said to them, no, I don't know how you developed that, you honed that. That has to do with your experience with other human beings. That doesn't necessarily come from a business background. If I'm a professional psychologist, it doesn't come from that either. That comes from interaction between human beings over a period of time.
Could that have also come from your background in show business?
Yes, I think it does, because you are taught to read behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody is different every day. Maybe yesterday, your sister, with whom you were close, passed away. And you come on stage that night. You're a different person. And I have to detect that because I'm acting with you. I have to read that. So you have to be sensitive to all of those things that are happening. And there are indicators of that.
Right.
And you're taught as an actor to sense the surroundings, to be sensitive to the room, to the light, to the colors, to everything, because that affects you. That affects your behavior.
Yep.
And everybody's behavior is affected by those things. And you have to be able to read those signs. So that training as an actor helps.
Well, it seems to me that there are certain behaviors, certain body movements and so forth that might suggest questions of ethics, character, whatever, that you might not be conscious of, but you have some doubts.
The key word is conscious. You read people, you read behavior, and you're not conscious of it. They say, for example, if you sit like this with your arms crossed, if you speak in a certain way, that indicates something. A guy pounds the table. Well, why does he pound the table? Because it's a substitute, because he can't hit the other person. So all of those things have some meaning, but it's subconscious. You subconsciously train yourself for that.
Okay, here's another question. How can the financing of the business be a creative pursuit?
Two ways. First of all, there are no rules about financing, except what the SEC, what the law says. So you can make up all kinds of things. I'm in the middle of one right now in which I'm designing a financing. This is a business that, because of the way the capitalization was, requires something mildly creative in order to make their second round of financing attractive. So we have designed alone, but it's not alone. It's disguised.
Okay.
It's going to be a piece of preferred stock. Well, why is that like a loan? It's going to be redeemable. It's going to get paid back. But it's not a loan because a dividend on a preferred stock comes after taxes.
Right.
Then in order to make that attractive, we're going to attach a warrant to that. A warrant is an option.
Mm-hmm.
That warrant is going to make this paper more attractive because it gives the person an option to buy the stock again somewhere in the next 5 years at a percentage of the value of the company as determined by generally accepted accounting practices, GAAP, as they say.
Right.
You're appealing to somebody's greed, let's face it, because they're going to buy it for less than what the public market may deem this to be worth. That allows this person to say, oh, I see, now I can make some real money.
Right.
If it works.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, that's creative in a technical sense. The other creative thing is you're saying, is this financing going to do what it's supposed to do? What are we going to do with this money? Why do we need this financing and what is it going to do for us? We know the source of funds is we're going to sell stock. What are we going to do with that and how is it going to produce income and income stream going forward?
Okay, obviously from the way you're talking about this, you have deep financial experience, but you've also got an incredible business mind.
Well, I'm happy to hear that because I don't think of myself as an expert at all.
But you do come across as one.
No, I'm asking questions most of the time. I sat in a meeting yesterday here in New York in which a guy made a presentation about an e-commerce business. I know nothing about e-commerce businesses. So it's scary. And I'm asking a lot of questions. I said, listen, I'm a boob when it comes to this. I don't know anything. So you're going to hear a lot of what you would think of as naive and dumb questions. But I got to go through this because I am naive and dumb about this business. And you're going to have to explain certain things to me.
Uh-huh.
So it was a laborious process for these people, I think. But if you ask enough, you fish enough, you're going to catch some fish.
All right. Now, many businesses, when they're looking to the future, are looking at their competitors. In your book, you point out how it's much more important to look at regulations.
I don't know that it's more important. I think it depends on the business. For example, I just mentioned this e-commerce business.
Right.
You got to look at that competitively because the entry fee is not very high. You look at the enormous capitalization of Facebook or Twitter, or you take Google. There were probably more than 50 companies that do what Google does that did them before Google. But Google ends up being the biggest one. Why? I don't know. I don't understand Facebook or Twitter because I don't do those things. Facebook is so egocentric, and you're telling people about yourself all the time. I find that boring. But people do it, apparently, and love to do it, and it's got a huge capitalization. So there's a case where I don't think all the homework in the world is going to tell you how successful that can be or not be until you actually get into it. Those kind of businesses make me nervous.
Kleinfeld Bridal Salon is a business that was in trouble, and you've turned it around.
Yes.
What gave you hope that you could make this a success?
The customers. You talk to the customers, and their mother went there, their grandmother went there. They keep coming back. By the way, the guy had it before us, did everything he could to kill it, and he couldn't kill it. He didn't intentionally do it, but he wasn't paying attention to the business.
Mm-hmm.
If it survived, I'm thinking to myself, we can make this thing grow.
So you brought people into the business?
Yes. My partner, Ronnie Rothstein, and his wife, Mara Urschel, run the business. Mara was 20 years a senior vice president at Saks, so she knows the business.
Uh-huh.
She knows the part that has to do with style and design and fashion, which I wouldn't know.
Of course.
I have an opinion. Is it worth anything? Probably not. So I say, this dress is more attractive than that dress. Do I know what I'm talking about? Absolutely not. Do designers know what the hell they're talking about? No. The customer is the person who's going to make that decision. The customer is the person who's going to say, yeah, I like that dress. And if more customers like this one than they like that one, that's what makes it a success. Now, in a line of dresses, you're going to have several designs, and you're going to find out pretty quickly which ones sell and which ones don't.
Yeah.
And I don't think people who are named designers, who design for those fashion houses, Gucci or Karl Lagerfeld or those kind of people, year after year after year, design for the customer. I think they design for themselves because they are a name and can get away with that. And then the customer either likes it or doesn't like it. And it doesn't really matter because they're going to come back next year. That's something like the movie business.
Right.
You know everything is not going to be a hit. So you're going to make a whole bunch of movies and hope that some of them stick.
And the insight came from doing your homework, talking to the customers?
Mostly this came from the customers, yes. But the administrative part is purely, can we manufacture this dress at this price and sell it at that price? And that's not necessarily a creative thing. What is creative about that is to say, okay, take this dress apart. And instead of sewing 25 pieces, can we make this dress with 8 pieces? That allows us to cut down our manufacturing costs. Now, that's a creative design that has not to do with what the customer wants, but has to do with how we get from A to B.
Right.
Also, there's a creative element in how you position the dress. Our average sale at Kleinfeld is $4,000. Therefore, if our average hits there, I'm not going to go out and pack the store with $12,000 dresses. Now, I'm going to pack it with $1,000 dresses. I'm going to design somewhere to that median.
Right.
And try to get a dress that women will love.
Okay, I'm just curious, how much time do you spend with the two people who are heading Help Kleinfeld?
Ronnie is a salesperson. He's very good at selling, but he relies on me to do most of the financial stuff. Mara is very good at the design stuff. But one night she says, we need an Italian designer. Now, do you know Ann Taylor, the stores?
Yes.
Have you ever seen Ann Taylor?
No.
There's a reason. She doesn't exist.
No kidding.
There is no Ann Taylor. It's a line. The Ann Taylor stores are a line. So one night we're having dinner and Mara says to me, I need an Italian designer. Well, we were eating caprese. And I said, how about, and I'm thinking I need a musical name to go with that. I said, how about Daniela Caprese? She said, great, done. So we have a line. And it's done by her design team. When they say, well, when is Daniela going to give a trunk show? Ah, she doesn't like to travel. And it's very successful. We probably do $3 million a year in Daniela Caprese. Now, we've got 3 or 4 lines like that that are designed by the design team, but the name is there.
Right, right.
At big design houses, a lot of the so-called name designers no longer are alive, but somebody else is designing that line. It's the name that sells it and identifies it.
Okay, Wayne, so you understand customers and the way people make decisions.
That's what you need to do.
We've been speaking to Wayne Rogers, author of the book, Make Your Own Rules, A Renegade Guide to Unconventional Success, and it was published by AMACOM, a division of the American Management Association. Wayne, thanks so much for being with us today on Edgewise.
Thank you.
With only an internet connection and a browser, you can tap into AMA's world-class training. The American Management Association is bringing live instructor-led training right to your desktop. AMA's new virtual seminar offering features a live virtual format that is highly interactive and very user-friendly. It's taught by the same expert, world-class faculty that run our classroom sessions, and the high-quality content has been specially engineered to run in an online format. You get real-time online interaction with your course leader and your fellow attendees. You will receive a USB headset so that you can not only listen but talk to your classmates and your instructor. So take advantage of these offerings, enhance your career journey by building your skills, and you don't have to take any time away from the office. For more information about AMA's virtual seminar offering, visit our website at www.amanet.org. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.